101 Priya. I'm just continuing what I started my conversation with God here about the guru. Is the time of the gurus over, as someone said, and just now, some hours ago, the Ayatollah, whatever his name is, top religious leader of Iran, was killed. And we're looking at a world where you can't really just say, here I am the appointed by God leader of you, you just do what I say and shut up. Of course, so in that way, this is representative of that moment. Which, of course, as, you know, here, for instance, the Christian priests or leaders, the king, that went away a long time ago. Now in the Indian village, you can have the teacher with student there, students. And yeah, you do what I say. That's how it used to be, and makes little sense there. The guru, our teacher, is representing God for us. It makes sense in a village where respect for the teacher is, and in general, of course, is laudable or honorable and cultured. And there were the kings, but who were, and to the extent they were successful, distinguished by their own actions. They were out there in the front lines on the battlefields fighting for their countries. But that time is gone. Say the time of the gurus was over when Prabhupada left. Those men of the 19th century, especially in Asia, were of a completely different breed. So, thoughts for today, looking at the world as it actually looks now. And also looking back to that time, and I'm talking about the time when the founder of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, left this world. And the meetings that his leading disciples had just a few months after incidentally the same days that I moved into that temple in Uradakund south of Stockholm. Many agree now that the right decision back then would have been, as Srila Swarup Damodar Goswami suggested, the only one among that leadership who was born in a Vaishnava family, that we should simply mourn Srila Prabhupada for some years now. No one taking any position on guru, this or that, but Prabhupada is our guru, and we work together now to take care of his movement. And he said, you know, your love for me is proven by how you work together. That's the thing. Not, you know, but then the gurus, as big as ever, as much as ever in control of the souls of their disciples. You know, that village guru from India that had been, of course, taken to new heights through the years, and to then found in these strange cults, as they appeared and were called and are called, where these gurus became too big. Where things just off the road, off the wall. because of problems with people as such, but someone sits there not with the disciples, students from the village, which is a natural system that this was kind of evolving from or growing from, but thousands and thousands and thousands from all over the world, and money involved, and power structures, and buildings, and ownership, and riches. And how easy then it is when you are in that such a position, you find yourself in such a position, to just go astray. I mean, I would say it's cruel to put a person in such a situation, or if one puts oneself in it, one is cruel to himself or herself. Because it would be, I mean, at least as I picture it, I mean, and I know people who were in that position, they would like to discuss that more with, impossible almost to handle, to resist being drawn into. I mean, I learned a bit about the life of David Bowie because I still like his, what he did for the music world and so on. And he invented that. That's how he became famous. That character, Ziggy Stardust, dressing up on stage, a theater play on stage, stepping up there, acting as that character, and then going down, and that was it. It would be fun, they thought. He and his friends, especially his wife, I think, came up with this idea. And then he became that Ziggy Stardust. He got pulled into that role. You never saw him appearing other than in that dress, you could say. And he got sucked into that. I think he even said it himself. So he basically had to kill that character viciously, which he did, actually. So I think this is an example, you know, I wonder why I talk about some old rock musician or pop musician, but it's a psychological phenomena that I think appeared as mass media came, you know, the TV, radio, records, the music industry, all of that. And now even more so, the online world. And what then happens is a person, and I'm saying that this can happen to that Indian well-meaning person coming over to the West to spread Sanatana Dharma and the good message of, you know, enlightenment. But then this group psychology effect kicks in, so to speak, because you cannot you get drawn into that cycle of fame, you could say, fame effect, which, you know, Mr. Bowie got a taste of, and many others. Not to speak of the Beatles. It's a group psychology effect, I would say, caused by, amplified by the mass media, which can just, I would say, cause hysteric worship of an idealized figure that people, especially young people, project their ideals, their dreams of the perfect person or whatever on, that they identify with, and sometimes very deeply. I mean, just see the tears from the girl's eyes when Beatles were on stage. That's for real. And if the person or person standing there are giving out something very good, truth and reality and love and goodness, let's all work together, help each other, and we're all parts of God and Goddess. then, which I say, Srila Prabhupada did, of course. You can just read his books and it's there all over. And many others. Then that is good. But it's also, I would say, today, and he handled it. I think it's the only one I have seen handling it without going completely nuts. Not, I exaggerate, but anyway, we're getting problems from this. But anyway, why this is not good, and this is the point here. My personal point of view here, so you take it as it is and make up your own mind. Because I think we need these discussions. It's important. The leadership, we can think of it in a general sense, could be applied to religious movements or countries. Meaning our life in general. So it's important. But the problem with this projection, idolship and all of that, whether it is a musician or a spiritual leader or whatever, or a political leader, is that it can easily just create an illusion. It is an illusion in the eyes of the beholders. And we know that. I mean, we project, you meet someone you fall in love with, you project so much of your, you know, desires for what you want and who you want and how that perfect person should be. And, or maybe this is the one. And in the same way, you know, we're looking for God, really. Someone to lean on, someone who we can really, really trust. And then someone comes and says that he is God. You know, I mean, we saw these guys coming over from India, even posing that way. And people just, you know, they... I mean, some said they are dogs instead because they're really... just using that group psychology effect for getting rich and famous. I will become guru and get rich and famous. So there are people thinking like that. And we have to see that there are all these psychopaths and, you know, this is a fertile ground for them. So, I mean, what I'm trying to say here is, and I think it was Eisenhower who said that, what is it? That the only way, because he was seeing this military-industrial complex, was warning for it coming. And he said that the only way, I can find the exact quote somewhere, where he suggested the only way maybe to defeat this military-industrial complex is with citizen awareness, that citizens wake up and become aware and learn. And I really reacted to that because it's exactly how I've been, what I'm saying here actually, and what I've been thinking, that not taking sides of who is the good and the bad. But being careful also that when there is this big one up there saying that I know everything, you should just do what I say. You should just believe what I say. And whether it's told in an authoritarian way, you know, a dictator sitting up there with soldiers looking down and threatening us, you know, you just do what we say here. Or you find yourself in a society where there is social pressure, where you have to not just do as someone says, but to think and believe and see the world the way someone says. And that someone who says that can be then very discreetly hidden behind this beautiful media that we have today, because with media you can create forms and shapes and words and worlds that you can then project into people's minds. They're forming into their reality. So this is the reality, this is the real situation today, and those who study propaganda or marketing, whatever, on high psychological levels, they learn how to do this. So we have to see that reality and not think that this is just some, what do you call it, conspiracy theory. Even that word is ridiculous, because there are plenty of conspiracies and has always been. So this, I would even say that when that word is being used, it's kind of signaling, maybe it's being used to close one door that you maybe should open up and at least take a look through. There are many clever trickeries going on today, and it's really, really well-crafted illusions being projected out on this online media that we are all pretty much connected to these days, right? Looking out at the world, because through those screens we can see the world as it is, can't we? Anyway, so what I'm really trying to get at here is that the situation today is unique. That, I mean, we look at these AI, that we call them, they are simply like robots gathering, sorting around and very, very quickly structuring information according to our intelligence that is kind of stored in there. And in this way, giving us access to knowledge. I mean, we can ask questions. You know, I can ask it to quote old scriptures of wisdom. And this is going to become more and more. A friend of mine, Professor Sardella, he told me that there are just millions of old ancient scriptures from India. What to speak of China, and, you know, if we were talking about India, from way, way back, thousands of years back, that they are now, because he's working with something there in India to preserve such ancient scriptures and to digitize them. And then I thought, what is this knowledge there? And I would say, if we start digging or continue digging, that maybe his immense resources of old scriptures written on palm leaves or whatever from thousands and thousands of years ago, passed from generation to generation in the form of stories, whatever, or imagery, allegories. So if that is all fed into, you know, saved and fed into this AI machine we have, we could, you know, we could build and have them get wise AI. But then again, not start to idealize and think that we have created God. Well, God may, of course, speak through anything or anyone. I mean, this world is mystical ultimately. But what this is all about, and what we find there actually in these old teachings of India, as an example, and I'm sure you find them in others too, it's like this in the mantra, Oma Gena Timiranda Sarganangena Salakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasma Sri Guru Venama. If my guru, my teacher, he opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. Just think of that. And I many times thought of that. This is why the disciple, this is a mantra that one learns to and often uses to glorify the guru. Not because there's someone there sitting telling me everything, how it is, but who opens my eyes so I can see clearly. In other words, even making himself unnecessary. And then I learned that this is a sign of the best leader. I learned this from within organizational consultancy books and all that. The best leader should be the one who makes himself unnecessary, because then he can go to do something else even better than this. And the corporation or company he made stands on its own now. I will say that goes for everything. If you see one working like this, then something good is going on. But if it's the other way, now you should just, you know, and all you ladies, you're all my wives, do you take turns with my bed? You know, this kind of way it can go otherwise. And someone drifts off into this, and this is like the psychopath cult, which can develop everywhere. So we have to be, that's what I mean, we have to be careful and learn and see ourselves. And that's what the real guru is there for, to say, you know, open your eyes, here is a torch of knowledge, whatever that means. But, you know, metaphorically beautiful. Phew, I can see clearly now. Says the disciple, and then the guru goes, yeah, that's what it's about. Now you go out and help others see clearly. And he doesn't charge anything for it. He doesn't demand allegiance or service or anything like that. Just being happy to serve. So, but the thing is that then we are beyond this big and small. You know, we learn from each other. And I learned this word there when I first came to the Krishna Consciousness Movement in 78, joined the Brahmacharya Ashram as a Bhakta. Most of what I learned from other Bhaktas and from the, you know, the little older devotees who had been there for 3 years or four or five, who knew much more than I did. So much of what I still learn, and which is here foundation of my life, came from them. So, and that's what I mean, that if back when this, you know, when Srila Prabhupada left and they had this meeting about how to proceed, if they had decided, yeah, let's just be ourselves. Now we're, you know, sisters and brothers, family here, Srila Prabhupada's children and grandchildren. Now just stick together, and here is our guru, Srila Prabhupada. He has left his beautiful, he's there in his scriptures. And we have understood them to some extent, but we should not just continue together here. And there's so much more to understand. And we are not that different anyway, which we weren't. I mean, practically the same age. I mean, my guru was 7 years older than me and had been, you know, I mean, they were all among those hippie types from New York or California. That's, you know, that was the beauty of the ISKCON in those days. It was kind of founded among such people, which we then also just had to see, hey, it's not strange that things went weird. It's rather strange that it went as well as it did. So here we are, and things look good. But I just emphasize, and I've been doing it on social media regarding the global political situation, but I can also do it regarding this spiritual situation now at the departure of a spiritual dictator, you could say, of Iran. So yeah, things happen in the world. And I would quote Eisenhower there, not just about the military situation, but the general. I mean, when ordinary citizens, we are the people. And I mean, we see no more. And when I would say that we will see more and more people going out demonstrating on the streets, we the people. But that can be manipulated as well. It's easy, you know, those who are controlling these media, there are very smart people out there. They can create such demonstrations in any capital city they want on the earth. Putting together a few thousand people, it's not difficult. It's been done, I mean, systematically by smart agitators since, I mean, a long time, and Cold War. It was so... And we have now, and we should help each other to get it more, access to the accumulated wisdom of the world. Since way back to the beginning of, you know, when anything was spoken or written down. And we should just continue, and we should, you know, some find it difficult to understand these old scriptures of wisdom, Bhagavad Gita, oof, Sanskrit, can't even open it, it looks so difficult. And some they just gobble these down and go, wow, that was cool. So we're different, and we should just as the Vedic knowledge, and Vedic, it's a very universal term, it's not just some Indian Hindu thing, it's a system of knowledge. It's evolving, it's like a tree that's compared to that in the Bhagavad Gita, which then continues to grow, more branches, a little branch there, this direction, that direction. This is my tribe, this is my country, this is my people, this is my understanding, but we are all in the same tree. And knowledge is knowledge about reality as it is, as opposed to illusion. So this is what's going on here. And I would say in the future, looking into it, I mean, I think that these kind of sectarian religions, especially, I mean, the top, how to say, theocratic or patriarch leaders, they have fallen. I mean, it doesn't work anymore. A new structure, new system has to take over. And I would say again, Eisenhower, you know, it seems that today we can help each other. I mean, if important truths, that's what we should share and look for. And you should not accept what I say as truth just because I say it is. You should look for the truth, and when you see it and you go, yes, now I am convinced that this is fact. This, I believe, this makes sense. Then you share that with others. And if that truth you have come up with is about violence and suffering for many people and or leading to suffering for yourself as well, then maybe it's not truth very much. Because the truth that we are, that I am, you know, founded on, found there when I was in my early 20s, and that we all are, I mean, we devotees of God are standing upon or resting on, taking shelter of, is that, yeah, that we are not bodies, only we are eternal spirit souls, parts of the Supreme Son, and Supreme Bhagavan, Supreme Spirit Soul, who is woman and man together, a couple, loving each other and loving all of us, and we're all just... it's all a big leela, a wonderful play of God's joyful pastimes that we are part of, and we can make our own pastimes. And it's all, you know, sometimes we dream away too far into nightmares, but then whoops, come back again and continue the fun. I mean, that's the worldview we are presenting here. And if you like that cosmos, then, you know, you're welcome. And this is what I'm also inviting in my book there, the Vedic Planetarium, that here is a cosmos for you. Try it out while you read this book. And if you like it, then you can stay there if you like. It's just a way of looking at the world, a worldview. So if we have a worldview that makes sense, that is actually connected to reality, then our lives are happy. And if not, if it's a worldview that is based on an illusion or some crazy idea, which materialism is, then we're going to see a hell, which, you know, and you can just look out and see what you want. Look at the reality that we have here, which is just reflecting the state of the collective human consciousness, human mind. And I mean, Carl Jung, he warned us, you know, if enough many people in that collective mind, collective consciousness, that actually the world is seen in that way psychologically, which I say the most important, if that goes astray, we can have, you know, Hitler times 100 today. But we can also have wisdom and love and friendship and understanding and beauty times 100 and times 1,000. it all depends on you. I know how it sounds like now, but I mean you and me. What you think, what your worldview is, what you think that you are, and your role in this world, and who you think is the good one, a bad one, which they are being told that they are there. We are the good ones. No, we are the, they are the evil. You should go out and fight the evil ones. Then, again, Eisenhower, citizens start to learn and wake up, become aware. And I'm saying this also, you know, we're talking sometimes about spiritual movements or spiritual or material, but I mean, this Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, which my book is simply like a popular science presentation of, you could say. But, you know, to show how it connects so well with pre-materialistic worldview in general, and I would say, yeah, anyway, read it if you're interested. But anyway, this is my little contribution to the world today, which is simply just by pointing out this knowledge which is out here, is available. And waking up means not just something esoteric, but, you know, rather than taking that other beer or glass of wine and looking at that other movie and playing another game or having sex another time or working like a madman or woman to make more money or power or position or whatever, or to get that thing, or that title, or that whatever. We use that time, at least some of it, not even needed so much of the, of this time. Take some of that time, which is sometimes just, you know, floating away in some kind of passing of time. Use some of that every day. Little sadhana, you know, little good habit to add. To become a little wiser, to learn and start where you want to. I mean, I started looking here, you know, at the world situation today with big empire now led by some fear attacking that old theocratic patriarch, thousands of years old. Nation, country around Persia. Oof, big things going on today. And scary it can look. But again, it's just what's going on in the minds of us, in the minds of those people in those positions of leaders, and in the minds of us standing here looking at it. And again, the danger is the military-industrial complex, which, I mean, in the almost symbolic general sense, I mean, this big monster that has appeared, monsters that are walking around on Earth, just gobbling up resources to become stronger and more powerful, and we should just serve them and give them our natural resources. And these monsters, they are corporations, some strange social cancers. And we have to be careful aware. And they are extremely expert and have all the means, including the screen you are looking at this on, what is behind it and who are feeding it. They have control over our minds unless we just, hey, let's get aware here. So there is this overground, not underground, but an overground group being mystically formed now out here online called the Awares. Which of course simply means that get aware, share good information, read a little bit every day, look at other sources, you know, like I go to YouTube and I find people who are kind of outside of the systems, who are not serving it anymore. And they can be old diplomats and old even government advisors who were sitting as direct personal advisors to presidents of the past. One of them is this Ray McGovern, who was the personal advisor of Ronald Reagan. I mean, these people are going out now. They are retired, they have nothing to fear anymore, and they are speaking out with incredible experience and knowledge and wisdom, I would say. And they are saying, stop doing this war thing. Have you forgotten how terrible war can be? You know, these old people. So we should listen to the, you know, and let our own hearts lead us in who we should listen to, who will resonate with our heart in there. And you know, as far as I'm concerned, it might be in, you know, spiritual circles like the Krishna movement or Vaishnava Sanatan Dharma communities, or the political scene, or whatever. What resonates with my heart is when you find that, you know, respect and love and tolerance and forgiveness and cooperation and sharing, which is the winning, sustainable concept, when that is being propagated, and I call it Dharma. And if you understand what Dharma means, you can understand what I really mean. That it incorporates these, you know, Dharma includes the organic, ecological, and the sustainability, and all of those needs we have on our planet today, and also a win-win cooperative culture among humans, which is not some utopian dream, but which we find in cultures through history. We just need to learn history. But we also find today, and I would say you find a bit of it there in Asia. Name no specific countries, but it's there in the Asian thinking, especially the big centers there of Asia, cultural, philosophical, you know, this great history you find there in Asia, which is especially, I would say, we often say that their treasure is a form of their knowledge. that's where this Dharma or the way or the Tao comes from. That's where you find that we should live in harmony within our society, with each other and nature, the different social classes or groupings. We should all serve the social, you know, the society at large, the social body, which is really there to serve God, you know, representing God in a way that we serve God. It's beautiful, this Dharma concept. So what we have now in the process of being shaped is a foundation which kind of promotes Dharma in that way. But anyway, enough for now. Hare Krishna.